VOA 1, The Hits.
Hey.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Friedel, John Russell, and Alice Bryant. Later, we will bring you part three of The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe on American Stories. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The U.S. government is considering a plan that would offer protections to people coming into the country to flee areas threatened by climate change. No country offers asylum or other legal protections to people displaced specifically because of the effects of climate change. President Joe Biden's administration is studying such a plan. Biden issued an executive order in February that instructed his National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, to discuss with federal agencies how such protections could be created. His discussions are expected to center on how the U.S. could identify and resettle people displaced directly or indirectly by climate change. A report on the discussions is expected in August. A recent report by the World Meteorological Organization found that since 2010, about 23 million people a year have been displaced by drought, rising sea levels, and other climate-caused disasters. The United Nations says there may be as many as 200 million climate-displaced people worldwide by 2050. The plan to offer protections to people fleeing climate change-related events is supported by Democratic Senator Edward Markey of Massachusetts. He plans to reintroduce legislation to address the lack of protections for those who do not fit the narrow definition of refugees under international law. "We have a greater chance now than ever before to get this done," Markey said in a statement to the Associated Press. He said this is because Biden is good at climate diplomacy and has a great awareness of the climate problems facing the world. Political experts say such legislation is likely to face a lot of opposition. One problem would be how to define a climate refugee when natural disasters and violence often both happen in areas people are fleeing, such as Central America. If the U.S. did define a climate refugee, it could mark a major change in refugee policies worldwide. Supporters of such a plan say it would make sense for the U.S. to lead the way. "No nation in the world has taken the leadership to address this reality, which we face today," said Krish Vignaraja. She heads the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. "It's not an issue that we can punt to 20, 30 years from now," she told the AP. "Our hope is the U.S. can take strong action that will produce a domino effect on other nations." A study by university researchers in the U.S. suggests climate change is moving away from a migrant population of mainly men seeking better economic situations to families fleeing hunger. Researchers at Duke University and the University of Virginia studied migration out of Central America. The study involved data on about 320,000 Hondurans caught at the U.S.-Mexico border from 2012 to 2019. The information showed that the individuals were largely from violent agricultural areas that were also experiencing their lowest rainfall in 20 years. While the study found that climate change is a driving force, there remains little political will to help climate migrants, said the study's co-writer, David LeBlanc. He is a professor of politics and policy at the University of Virginia. As a political scientist, I would say the chances of this happening right now are close to zero, he said. Some experts say political pressure may lead Biden to drop the idea after the number of people stopped by the Border Patrol last month hit a 20-year high. I'm Brian Lynn.
Minari is a vegetable known as Korea's water celery or watercress. It is also the name of a film nominated for a number of Academy Awards, known as Oscars, on Sunday. The film, produced by Christina Oh, received nominations for Best Picture and Best Original Score from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Lee Isaac Chung, who wrote and directed the film, is nominated for Best Director and Best Original Screenplay. Its actors, Steven Yeun and Yoon Ya-jung, are nominated for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actress. Lee Isaac Chung based the movie on his own family's story. They moved from California to the southern state of Arkansas to start a farm growing Korean vegetables in the 1980s. Steven Yeun plays the father, Jacob, who hopes to sell vegetables to markets and restaurants with a large number of Korean-American customers. He wants to start a new life for his family, which includes his wife Monica and his children Anne and David. The 73-year-old Yoon plays Soon Ja, a grandmother who comes from Korea to live with them. The movie centers on the family's struggles in rural America. Jacob has trouble finding water and growing his vegetables. Monica is unhappy living on a farm. The children, who see themselves as Americans, think of their grandmother as a stranger from a foreign country. They also deal with racism in a part of the U.S. where everyone else is white. It is the story of a husband and a wife whose life has not gone as planned. It is the story of immigrants trying to fit in while keeping their own culture. It is the story of a little boy and his grandmother. And it is the story of an American family. The Korean language, however, is the main language in the movie. The Golden Globes, another movie award event, gave Minari the Best Foreign Film Award. But many people were unhappy that it was not able to compete with other American movies. It also added to a conversation that Asian Americans, especially those born in the U.S., worry that white people do not think of them as American. The issue became even more important with news reports of violence against Asian people in the U.S. and the killing of Asian American workers at businesses in the state of Georgia in early March. Yoon, who plays the grandmother, said she thinks life must be difficult for young Asian Americans who think they are Americans, but in the eyes of Americans, they don't look American. The movie is up against seven others for the Best Picture Award. They are The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, The Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago Seven. I'm Dan Friedel.
The American Space Agency, NASA, has collected oxygen from the atmosphere of another planet for the first time. A device on NASA's Mars Explorer Perseverance was able to extract oxygen from carbon dioxide on the red planet. It was the second major event during the Perseverance mission to Mars. NASA announced the experiment on Wednesday. The experimental device is called MOXIE, short for Mars Oxygen In Situ Resource Utilization Experiment. It produced about 5 grams of oxygen. That amount would permit an astronaut to breathe for about 10 minutes, NASA said. Although the amount of oxygen was small, it marked the first experimental extraction of a natural resource from the environment of another planet. Trudy Cortez is director of technology demonstrations within NASA's Space Technology Mission Directorate. In a statement, she called MOXIE the first technology of its kind to help future missions live off the land of another planet. The instrument works through electrolysis, a process which uses extreme heat to separate oxygen atoms from molecules of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide makes up about 95% of the Martian atmosphere. The rest is mainly molecular nitrogen and argon. Oxygen exists on Mars in very small amounts, but a large supply of it is important for human exploration there. It is necessary for astronauts to breathe and for rocket fuel. MOXIE lead investigator Michael Hecht said in NASA's news release that transporting a 1-ton oxygen conversion machine to Mars is easier than trying to take tons of oxygen from Earth. Large amounts of oxygen are needed to launch rockets into space from Mars. Astronauts living and working on Mars would require possibly 1 metric ton of oxygen to last 1 year, Hecht added. MOXIE is designed to produce up to 10 grams of oxygen in an hour. Scientists plan to run the machine at least 9 other times over the next 2 years under different conditions. The first oxygen extraction came 1 day after NASA carried out the first controlled powered flight of an aircraft on another planet. The very small robot helicopter was able to launch from and land on the surface of Mars. Like Moxie, the helicopter, named Ingenuity, rode to Mars with perseverance. The spacecraft has 6 wheels, so it can move across the planet's surface. Perseverance's main mission is to search for signs of ancient microbes that may have lived on Mars billions of years ago. I'm John Russell.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Abid about something a lot of people have in their living rooms. Here is what he says. Hi, I have a question. What is the difference between couch and sofa? Hello, Abid. In my living room, I have a long piece of furniture covered in cloth. Sometimes I call it a couch. Other times, I call it a sofa. In the United States, the words couch and sofa are generally interchangeable. That means either word is used to describe this piece of furniture, which a person can sit or lie down on. A Google Ngram of the two words tells us that in the U.S. today, the words are about equally common, with couch being a little more popular. Historically, however, the meanings were different. The word couch comes from the French word coucher, and once meant a low, bed-like piece of furniture that did not have arms. And the word sofa, which comes from Arabic, was something more like a bench with arms and a back. Today, the American public uses either word, whether or not the piece of furniture has arms. However, some people consider the word couch to be less formal than sofa. And sofas might sound as though they are more costly and refined than couches. It is worth noting that some industries only use the word sofa. That includes furniture, designers, makers, and sellers, as well as home decorators. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Alice Bryant.
The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. Part 3.
My housemate in Paris, Auguste Dupin, was an interesting young man with a busy, forceful mind. This mind could, it seemed, look right through a man's body into his deepest soul. After reading in the newspaper about the terrible murder of a woman and her daughter, Dupin was consumed with the mystery. He questioned the ability of the Paris police to solve the crime. I told Dupin that it seemed to me that it was not possible to explain the strange details surrounding the killings.
No, no. I think you are wrong. A mystery it is, yes. But there must be an answer. There must. Let us go to the house where it happened and see what we can see. I know the head of the police, and he will permit our visit. It will be interesting and give us some pleasure.
I thought it strange that Dupin thought the activity would give us pleasure. But I said nothing. It was late in the afternoon when we reached the house on the Rue Morgue. It was easily found, for there were still many persons, in fact a crowd, standing there looking at it. Before going in, we walked all around it, and Dupin carefully looked at the neighboring houses as well. I could not understand the reason for such great care. Finally, we entered the house. We went up the stairs to the room where the daughter's body was found. Both bodies were in the room now. The police had left the room as they had found it in every other way. I saw nothing beyond what the newspaper had told us. Dupin looked with great care at everything, at the bodies, the walls, the fireplace, the windows. Then we went home. Dupin said nothing. I could see the cold look in his eyes, which told me that his mind was working busily, quickly. Dupin said nothing about our exploration until the next morning, when he suddenly asked me a question.
Did you not notice something especially strange about what we saw at the house on the Rue Morgue?
Nothing more than what we both read in the newspaper, which was unusual indeed. How shall we explain the horrible force, the unusual strength used in these murders? And whose were the voices that were heard? No one was found except the dead women. Yet there was no way for anyone to escape. And the wild condition of the room, the body which was found head down in the chimney. The terrible, broken appearance of the body of the old lady, with its head cut off. These are all so far from what might be expected that the police are standing still. They don't know where to begin.
These things are unusual indeed, but they are not deep mysteries. We should not ask what has happened, but what has happened that has never happened before. In fact, the very things that the police think cannot possibly be explained are the things which will lead me to the answer. Indeed, I believe they have already led me to the answer.
I was so surprised that I could not say a word. Dupin looked quickly at the door.
I am now waiting for a person who will know something about these murders, these wild killings. I do not think he did them himself, but I think he will know the killer. I hope I am right about this. If I am, then I expect to find the whole answer today. I expect the man here, in this room, at any moment. It is true that he may not come, but he probably will.
But who is this person? How did you find him?
I'll tell you. While we wait for this man we do not know, for I have never met him, while we wait, I will tell you how my thoughts went.
Dupin began to talk, but it did not seem that he was trying to explain to me what he had thought. It seemed that he was talking to himself. He looked not at me, but at the wall.
It has been fully proved that the voices heard by the neighbors were not the voices of the women who were killed. Someone else was in the room. It is therefore certain that the old woman did not first kill her daughter and then kill herself. She would not have been strong enough to put her daughter's body where it was found. And the manner of the old lady's death shows that she could not have caused it herself. A person can kill himself with a knife, yes, but he surely cannot cut his own head almost off, then drop the knife on the floor and jump out the window. It was murder, then, done by some third person or persons. And the voices heard were the voices of these persons. Let us now think carefully about the things people said about those voices. Did you notice anything especially strange in what was told about them?
Well, yes. Everybody agreed that the low voice was the voice of a Frenchman. But they could not agree about the high voice.
Ah, that was what they said, yes. But that was not what was so strange about what they said. You say you have noticed nothing that makes their stories very different from what might have been expected. Yet, there was something. All these persons, as you say, agreed about the low voice, but not about the high, hard voice. The strange thing here is that when an Italian, an Englishman, a Spaniard, and a Frenchman tried to tell what the voice was like, each one said it sounded like the voice of a foreigner. How strangely unusual that voice really must have been. Here are four men from four big countries, and not one of them could understand what the voice said. Each one gave it a different name. Now, I know that there are other countries in the world. You will say that perhaps it was the voice of someone from one of those other lands. Russia, perhaps. But remember, not one of these people heard anything that sounded like a separate word.
Here, Dupin turned and looked at me.
This is what we have learned from the newspaper. I don't know what I have led you to think, but I believe that in this much of the story, there are enough facts to lead us in the one and only direction to the right answer. What this answer is, I will not say. Not yet. But I want you to keep in mind that this much was enough to tell me what I must look for when we were in that house on the Rue Morgue. And I found it. What did I first look for? The path of escape, of course. I mean, we agree the killers were not ghosts. They could not move through walls. So, how did they escape? At first, I saw no way out. It had been necessary for the neighbors to break down the door in order to enter the room. There was no other door. The opening above the fireplace is too narrow for even a child to go through. That leaves only the windows. We must make that exit somehow possible. Remember, there are two windows in the room. Both of them, you will remember, are made of two parts. To open the window, one must lift up the bottom half. One of these windows is easily seen. The lower part of the other is out of sight behind the big bed. I looked carefully at the first of these windows. It was firmly closed, fastened like the door on the inside. To keep the window closed, to fasten it, someone had put a strong iron nail into the wood at the side of the window in such a way that the window could not be raised. At least it seemed that the nail held the window closed. The nail was easy to see. There it was. And the people who discovered the killings used their greatest strength and could not raise the window. I, too, tried to raise the window and could not. I went to the second window and looked behind the bed at the lower half of the window. There was a nail here, too, which held the window closed. Without moving the bed, I tried to open this window also, and again I could not do so. But I did not stop looking for an answer there. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.